content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Ed Tremblay from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from the Tar Heel Junior Historian Magazine, North Carolina History for Students. Be reading articles from the fall 2017 issue, volume 57, number 1. Carolina Style, What Stories Do Our Clothes Tell? The first article is an interview, Why Should We Care About Old Clothes? This is from Kathy East. Your North Carolina Museum of History collects all kinds of things we once wore, from hats and pants and dresses to jewelry and shoes. Yes, old shoes. These items tell stories about the lives of North Carolinians, from revolutionary soldiers waging the War of Independence from Britain to hippie students protesting the Vietnam War. They reveal our history as we move from the farm to the city. They tell stories of how we survived war times, hard times, and good times. But how do these clothes get here? Where do we find them? How do we take care of them and get them ready to show off in the museum? We went behind the scenes to talk to museum textile conservator Paige Myers to find out. A conservator is someone who is responsible for the care, restoration, and repair of items in a museum. What do you do at the museum? My title is Textile Conservator. I work with the museum's clothing and anything that is made of fabric. Basically, what I do is look at a textile in our collection and ask three questions. Number one, what is it? Number two, what's wrong with it? Number three, how can I fix it? I also clean the clothing, do repairs, and dress mannequins for all our exhibits. We document everything, even down to what chemicals we used to clean the item. We take photographs before and after working on the items. That leaves a record so the next generation of conservators will know what we did. How did you learn how to do this? I earned an undergraduate Bachelor of Science degree in clothing and textiles. I studied costume history, fashion history, and science, like chemistry. Yes, there's lots of science in what we do. Then I did graduate work at the University of Alberta in Canada, which included three internships. Internships are great because they give you a chance to gain hands-on experience working on collections. How many items of clothing does the museum have? Easily more than 20,000 items. However, most of these are not on display. Old clothes are often delicate and can be damaged by natural light and light from bulbs. Even the ones we do display must be changed out frequently to protect them. That's why it's so special to be able to see old clothing in an exhibit. Where do they come from? Our museum founder, Colonel Fred Olds, began our collection in the early 1900s. He obtained a lot of our original Civil War and World War I clothes. At the time, he actually knew people from those wars who were still living. He realized how important it was to preserve what they wore. It's a curator's job to find and preserve things of historical value to add to the museum's collection. A lot of our collection comes in on its own. All kinds of people will call a museum and say, "My grandmother has a dress. Would you be interested in seeing it?" How does the museum decide which artifacts to accept? First, we ask, is it in decent condition and can it be conserved? Is it from North Carolina? Then we compare it to what we already have. We may be looking for things to fill out our collection. How do you figure out the date of a piece of clothing? Knowing a lot about costume history helps. We also use books on fashion and old fashion plates from the time period. Knowing about sewing helps us understand how a garment was put together. can also look at the fabrics and what the thread is made of to make sure it is something the person would have used at the time. We can even look under a microscope to confirm what the fabric or thread is made of. The internet is now one of our best tools. I can go online and visit other museums all over the world. I can see a dress and say, ah, that's similar to the one we have. We can compare styles and fabrics and historical information. It's wonderful. It's amazing that we still have clothes that are so old. Yes, some of these items are 200 years old, but I'm concerned about modern clothes. We don't know how they're going to age compared to natural fibers like cotton. A lot of the man-made materials have only been around since the 1940s. We have some linen from 1753, and it's in better condition than some of the things brought in last year. For example, we have a 1960s dress made of polyurethane, a type of plastic, and it's disintegrating. We don't yet know how to stop it. How else have things changed? We are a throwaway society. People don't save or hand down clothes. We throw them out or donate them. We also have more clothes than people. Even a wealthy person in the 1820s might only have 6 dresses. We also don't repair clothes today. Many of those old items, you can see where people took the time to repair them over and over because the fabric was so expensive. Here are captions accompanying the photographs that are part of this article. Registrar Camille Hunt helps textile conservator Paige Myers unwrap costumes from the movie The Hunger Games, which were on view as part of the museum's exhibit starring North Carolina. Boy's Sailor Suit, 1916, which Paige worked on for the museum's exhibit The Shape of Fashion. Paige Myers works to repair an old flag. For the exhibit made especially for you by Willie Kay, Paige created invisible mannequins out of a shape called Foss shape, often used in the theater, which made the dresses seem to float. The next article is accessories. What is an accessory? It's a part of your outfit that you don't have to wear, but that adds a little something to the beauty, style, or function of your clothes. Accessories allow us to express our personalities, our style, our relationships, and our ideas. And they add to the fun. Here are just a few of the kinds of accessories that people love to wear. Why do people wear jewelry? People wear shoes to protect their feet. People wear clothes to keep warm and, well, because we can't walk around in our birthday suits. But why do people carry or wear accessories like jewelry? Even in prehistoric times, people adorned themselves with bones, feathers, and shells. The ancient Egyptians loved to accessorize, and the world's queens and kings have always been mad for bling. Here are some reasons we wear jewelry. Can you think of others? To show off wealth or status. To make ourselves feel pretty or cool, to tell the world that we are married, to remember someone who has died, to express ourselves. Here are the captions for the photographs of this, of the jewelry part of accessories. Pretty pins can also proclaim our thoughts about many things, including war and peace. A pearl stands in for the word in this pin commemorating the attack on Pearl Harbor, December 7, 1941, that led to the U.S. entry into World War II. This Dove of Peace pin was worn by Lillian Kirby Tuttle, born 1912, died 2002 in Raleigh. Before the invention of air conditioning, women in the South often carried decorative fans to keep cool as well as look cool. It's a painted fan from somewhere between 1850 and 1900. Jewelry is a way to keep someone close to your heart, literally, when wearing a pin like this. It's a miniature watercolor painted on ivory, a portrait of Jane Swan Jones of Pender County, aged 10 to 12. In the Victorian era, it was popular to weave jewelry made of hair, often to commemorate a loved one. This ring was made from the hair of Paisley Smith of Floral College in Robeson County. It had a small gold plate engraved with his initials, P.S. Why do guys wear ties? They come in all shapes and styles, polka dot, striped, plaid, and even maybe inscribed with the words, World's Greatest Dad. Many individuals don them at least 5 times a week. A ritual of second nature is brushing teeth, or hopefully combing hair. This bears an important question, however. Why do men wear ties? A tie doesn't add much warmth during winter. It's arguably one of the most uncomfortable pieces of clothing men wear. Lastly, it really doesn't play an essential role when wearing an outfit. It doesn't actually do anything. Yet, in many jobs, social gatherings, weddings, funerals, and more, it has become an essential norm. So exactly who's responsible for the necktie coming into existence? If we look back 400 years ago, most historians agree that the necktie came to be during the Thirty Years' War in France. Croatian mercenaries working for King Louis XIII wore a piece of cloth around their necks to tie their jackets with while in uniform. Let's just say King Louis was a mega fan of the look, so much so that he made ties a requirement for royal gatherings, naming them La Cravate, to honor the Croatian soldiers. So there you have it, a tradition 400 years in the making. We can all shout out a collective thank you to King Louis, or groan at the thought of the king's decision. It's your call. Will ties remain an important part of men's attire for years to come, continuing to evolve? Only time will tell. Here are the captions for this section. In the early days of photography, people dressed up for portraits. The young man in this photograph, 1905, chose to wear a bow tie, popular at the time. This boy, from the 1920s, is really rocking the accessories. Check out the width of his tie and the slight slant to his cap. He also seems to be sporting a watch chain, only what's dangling at the end? A lucky rabbit's foot. Poor Dad. Bob, Robert W. Newsom, reflects on all the ties he has received for Christmas, 1957. It's about time. If someone asks you what time is, where's the first place you look? Today, many people check the time on their phones, or maybe on their wristwatch, or a wall clock. But in the 1800s and early 1900s, a person would have likely checked their pocket watch. These small personal clocks got their names from the special pockets sewn into clothing just for carrying them. Having easy access to the correct time was an important part of modern life for North Carolinians as they began riding on trains, working in factories, and living in cities. After World War I, soldiers returning home started a new trend for wristwatches. They had learned in the Army that checking the time on your wrist is a lot quicker than fumbling in your pocket for a watch. It wasn't long before people considered pocket watches old-fashioned, and wristwatches became the hot timepiece fashion accessory. Here's a photograph with the caption, "The woman in this picture is from the 1880s, She's wearing an extremely long watch chain that loops around her neck and attaches to a watch in the watch pocket on her dress. And there's a little sidebar article. What is this little pocket for anyway? Have you ever wondered what that little pocket on your jeans is for? In 1873, Levi Strauss and Company began making denim work pants. Like other pants from the time, their blue jeans had a built-in watch pocket. Even though we don't carry pocket watches anymore, that little pocket has remained a part of the design on classic jean styles. Hats off to hats. Hats keep us warm in winter. Hats throw shade and keep us cool in summer. But there's more to hats than that. The hat you choose and the angle you use are all part of your Carolina style. Here are the captions for the hats section. The Civil War brought hard times to North Carolina. Confederate money lost value and prices soared. Store-bought clothing was too expensive or hard to find, and people had to make do. A Brunswick County woman used what she had and made this hat from palmetto fronds. Before the mid-1900s, North Carolina women rarely left their houses without some sort of head covering. By the time Virginia Curry wore this blue hat in the 1950s, and Betsy Buford wore this red hat in the 1960s, women mainly just wore hats for dressy occasions. Why are these men all dressed the same? Are they members of a boy band? No, they're just a group of men from Durham dressed in the styles of the day, which included the bowler hat. The image is a photo of John Pugh in the middle with a group of unknown men from the 1900s. And here's a sidebar. Think about it. Look at each hat on this page. Check out the ones on the cover and throughout this magazine. What does each hat tell you about the person who is wearing it? Now do the same at home, at school, when you watch TV, and when you're out in the world. Who is wearing a hat and why? Does the hat tell you something about the person, such as their age, job, religion, personality, or favorite sports team? Do you wear hats? Why or why not? If yes, what does your hat tell people about who you are? What kind of hat do you wish you could wear? Here's another sidebar. The American Indian Heritage Celebration. Jewel Richardson of the Haliwasaponi tribe in North Carolina wore this regalia, special clothes for official ceremonies, to dance at the North Carolina Museum of History's annual American Indian Heritage Celebration in 2012. The dress is called a women's jingle dance dress. The jingle dance is attributed to the Ojibwe tribe in the Great Lakes region, who say that the dress was first seen in a dream by a medicine man whose granddaughter had fallen ill. Today, this dance is still often performed as a healing dance. Jingle dresses are decorated with metal snuff can lids rolled up into cones that jingle against each other with every step a dancer makes. To learn more about the museum's annual American Indian Heritage Celebration held each November, visit ncmuseumofhistory.org. The next article is Did You Know That Your Clothes Can Talk? By Raylana V. Poteet, who is the curator of political and social history at the North Carolina Museum of History. Did you know that your clothing can talk? It can. T-shirts or jerseys can shout out who your favorite team or superhero or band is. And your suit or fancy dress can let people know that you're doing something more serious than just going out to play. Clothing can also be a very visible way to express your identification with a particular culture, place, or religion. America is a country of immigrants. Some families arrived here recently, while others have lived in the United States for generations. But one way or another, lots of American kids feel a strong connection to another culture or several other cultures based on their heritage or interests. Some kids tell other people about this bond by wearing national costumes, outfits that are immediately recognizable and associated with a certain culture or region. Kids might wear such clothing on special occasions and holidays or to dance or musical performances, or they might dress up to teach others about their culture during community festivals or special days at their school. Other kids wear items associated with their religion or on a more frequent basis. For example, some Muslim women and girls wear a hijab, head covering, daily, and Orthodox Jewish men and boys wear a kippah, a skull cap, or yarmulke. Did you ever wear clothing that associates you with a particular culture or group, even if you don't have clothing from a particular country? When you wear a shirt with your school's name on it, or wear state red, Duke blue, or Carolina blue on game days, you're letting others know about the people and groups that are important to you. Here are captions with the photographs for this article. Brothers Adeniyi, age 10, and Olufemi, age 7, Oyejide, are wearing denshikis, sometimes spelled dashikis, from Nigeria, where their father was born. Adeniyi is holding a talking drum, traditionally used during storytelling. The kids on this page attend A.B. Combs Leadership Magnet Elementary in Raleigh. Their school has several days a year when students who have a close connection to another country can be chosen to dress in national costumes and carry that country's flag. Meta Voita, age 9, whose Oba-chan grandmother is from Japan, wears a kimono and carries the Japanese flag. Leigh Hamad, age 10, whose family is from Palestine, wears a traditional Palestinian thub. Brothers Obrin Thang, age 1, Andin Toan, age 6, and Estin Tan, age 10, Gerber, whose mother is from South Vietnam, wear traditional Vietnamese garments called Do Dai. The next article is Stories from the Collection. Paper Dress. Would you wear clothes made from paper? How about this paper dress? The Scott Paper Company created the first of these disposable garments, which usually sold for about a dollar, in 1966 as an advertising gimmick. The trend caught on quickly and lasted through the rest of the decade. By 1967, Mars Manufacturing of Asheville was the nation's top producer of paper clothing, filling over 80,000 orders per week. This late 1960s paper dress was made by Smart Set Sportswear, also of Asheville. It is 80% cellulose and 20% cotton. Carved bone toothpick. Fashion influences things like manners as well as clothes and hairstyles. Can you imagine using a fancy accessory like this to pick your teeth after lunch in the cafeteria? This piece was made from beef bone by Private M.C. Clay in prison at Point Lookout during the Civil War around 1864. Clay made this toothpick for prison guard Jonathan Carpenter. Button hook and boots. Easy clothes like pull-on t-shirts and flip-flops or sneaks can help you dress fast so that you can beat your school's tardy bell. But what if you had to wear these black leather shoes from 1910 with all these buttons? A button hook like the sterling silver one was inserted into the buttonhole to grab the button and pull it through. Uh-oh, 26 buttons. You're late. Beaded hat. What happens when two cultures collide? Often each one borrows things from the other, like language, food, or fashion. This beautiful beaded cap from the early 1800s is shaped like a Highland Scotsman's Glengarry bonnet, but it's decorated with the colorful beadwork of the Tuscaroran people. Imagine how much time and work must have gone into the beading. Carolina parakeet. A person who designs, makes, or sells hats for women is called a milliner. The hats are referred to as millinery. These teal and lime green feathers that adorned a lady's hat in 1909 came from the Carolina parakeet, or Carolina conure. The bird became extinct or disappeared in part because people hunted the bird for its beautiful feathers. The last known living Carolina parakeet died in 1918. Washing machine. Do you hate to do laundry? What if you had to wash all your school clothes, sports uniforms, and gym socks in a washing machine like this one? This old wooden barrel-shaped washer from around 1900 had two interior half drums with cast iron arms, gears, and flywheel. Where do you plug it in? You don't. You supply the power using your arm to turn the crank. To dry, you would hang your clothes on nearby bushes or a clothesline stretched between two poles or trees. Bustles. Look at the dress at the top of the page 19. How did they make that shape? By the late 1860s, Women began to wear bustles made of all sorts of materials under their clothes. This weird contraption from the 1880s could fold up against itself, allowing the wearer to sit down. This full-length bustle, also from the 1880s, has flexible metal rods built into a white cotton petticoat. A pad sewn in near the top adds even more support. Next, some activities just for fun. What does your t-shirt say? The t-shirt used to be something that was worn but never seen beneath all your other clothes. It was first used as underwear around 1900. But in the late 1940s, the simple white t-shirt made a gradual transition from underwear to outerwear. Printing words and images on t-shirts began in the 1940s, but it didn't really take off until the 1960s. Young people in the counterculture turned their t-shirts into personal billboards. When you're wearing a t-shirt, what's on your mind is on your chest, whether it's your favorite sports team, your politics, or a social cause. Try this. Be a detective. Take a look around your school. Write down what kinds of t-shirts people are wearing. Write down any words, images, or logos that you see. Is there a trend? What does that say about your school? Number two, what's your passion? What do you want to tell the world? Design a t-shirt that expresses who you are and what you think. The UNC T-Shirt Archive is an online collection of historic t-shirts from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, from sports and Greek life to student protests and events. Check it out at unctshirtarchive.tumblr.com. Curious about curlers. Beulah Louise Henry, born 1887, died 1973, was an American inventor. Even as a child, she loved to tinker. When she grew up, she invented more than 100 useful things, from ice cream freezers and typewriting machines to an umbrella with covers that could be changed to match one's outfit. She was known as Lady Edison, after Thomas A. Edison, inventor of the light bulb. Know where she was from? Raleigh. Henry held 49 U.S. patents for her inventions, including the official patent for the cool-looking hair curler at left. A patent is a document giving an inventor the sole rights to an invention. Think of the things you wear and use each day. Can you dream up an invention to make these things easier or more fun? Want to learn more about inventions and patents? Visit the United States Patent and Trademark Office at www.uspto.gov. There's also a special page for kids at www.uspto.gov/kids/index.html. We've run out of time for today's episode of North Carolina History. Be sure to listen next time. I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Ed Tremblay, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast on our website, trianglereadingservice.org. So long until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138.